Hey guys, before we get into this week's podcast, which is going to be another awesome podcast full of information, I wanted to ask for your help and your participation on what we like to do every year, which is a charity golf tournament. It's called the Black Sheep Open. We do this once a year around this time. This one is in September 22nd. And the tournament is to raise funds for Homes for Our Troops. They are an organization that builds adaptive homes for wounded veterans. So it's an awesome organization. It's a great cause. And being that we are in real estate ourselves, we figured why not bring the community together, have a fun day at a golf course, drinking, playing, having a ton of fun, winning prizes. There's going to be a ton of prizes. There's a $10,000 prize as well. There's going to be a lot of drinking, jello shots. It gets really fun. And you get to play a lot of games and stuff like that. It's a scramble format tournament. So you can either bring a team or you can join a team. And out of every team, there's going to be at least one good golfer in there and best ball plays. So you can be a bad golfer, but a good putter and, best ball plays. So I hope to get you guys support. Share this with anybody that you know that likes to play golf. We are also needing volunteers. So if golf is not for you, you can also volunteer, and it's still a lot of fun, free food, free drinks. And again, all of it is for a great cause. So if you can, go over to blacksheepopen.com, blacksheepopen.com, and sign up. Registration will be closing shortly, I think at the beginning of September. So hurry up, get in there, sign up, and join us September 22nd. So without further ado, back to your regular scheduled programming. Welcome everybody to another episode of an Investor's Journey podcast, the only place where you're going to get the truth about real estate with none of the fluff. No sales, no bullshit, just strategies and things that we have implemented ourselves as we've grown our business. This Friday, we're here with John Barr, the other half of Prime Homes, and we are sharing a bottle of Macallan 12 Double Cask. Very good, and we are definitely enjoying it. So for this podcast, we had a listener ask about rising interest rates and what is that going to do to home prices. So what we decided to do is kind of put together based on our knowledge, on our experience, and what we look at, what we feel is going to happen to home prices as interest rates rise and what the effects are. Keep in mind, this is our opinion. There's no real things for you to grab onto. You got to do your own research because, we don't know what this is going to look like. We weren't here when interest rates skyrocketed to see kind of how things are. We can kind of look back at history and put together what can be affected, but what's going to actually happen, we don't know. We got to see how everything shakes out. So without further ado, we're going to start by explaining how do interest rates work, right? So how do they work? Why do they go up? Why do they go down? And then we'll move into how that affects the markets and everything like that. So welcome, Mr. John Barr.
How's it going, everybody? Yeah, like John mentioned, just talk a little bit about interest rates. Do you want me to kind of explain that analogy I was talking about?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so when they say the Fed interest rate, basically the interest rate, the Fed is in charge of controlling overall the economic growth and the flow of money and how much it costs to move money around. So the Fed uses this thing called the overnight rate. So when people hear, just to clear the air, when they say, the Fed's going to raise 0.25%, that doesn't mean interest rates across the entire board for every interest rate immediately jump 0.25%. The rate they're talking about is the overnight bank rate that banks have to charge each other to move money. So it's not raising interest rates everywhere. It's just what banks have to pay each other to move money around. And that's how they control money flow. Now, that does transfer into their profitability, because now their costs go up to borrow and lend and move money between each other, which they eventually pass on to the consumer via all their products, whether it be car loans, home loans, personal loans, whatever loans there are. But it's not a one for one immediate. So now they use that rate. Think of it, I use this analogy like a car. We want this car, and that stimulates that represents the economy. They want the car to move along at 60 miles an hour. That's the perfect optimal growth, and they want it to keep right at 60. But you're going through a lot of hills, ups and downs, speeding up, slowing down. So now use back in 2007. The car all of a sudden just slowed down to like 10 miles an hour. Well, it's way below where they want to be in 60, going instead of going 60 miles an hour, they're down at 10. So what do? They hit the gas to speed that car up, which in the Fed term with the interest rates, they lower the interest rates because that makes it cheaper for the banks to move and borrow and lend. They lower interest rates. That means it's cheaper for consumers to borrow, businesses to borrow money, to reinvest into capital. That gives them the ability to borrow more money for housing, for asset prices to increase. Now, the other side of that, once things get going, they start moving up, you hit that 45, you hit 50, you hit 60. At the interest rates that low where they're at, but now all of a sudden you start going 65, 70, 75, 80, 85. Now you're going too fast. So the bank hits, the Fed raises the interest rates to hit the brakes, to slow the economy back down, to slow that car back down to get to that 60 mile an hour. And it's very hard to hold that, it's impossible to hold right at 60. So that's why they raise and lower the interest rates. So right now the economy is picking up, that rate at which the economy is moving and inflation is taking impact is moving at a rate that they're like, hey, it's healthy, but we want to control it and slow it down, because if the car gets going too fast, the economy starts growing too fast, then you have too much inflation too quickly, and it can really damage a lot of previous loans. Like you have a 30-year mortgage only paying 4%, but now all of a sudden interest rates skyrocket to 10-12%, the bank's losing money. So they have to slow those things back down and let them rise and fall together. So that's kind of a very 101 explanation of what interest rates are and what they do. So John, does that make sense of how I explain that?
Yeah, and what you're explaining is what happened in 2007 was the financial crash, right? The housing bubble burst. People were getting loans that should have never gotten loans because they were doing it very cheap. They were trying to make them fit people that normally should have never bought a house. So they were lending out to anybody, and this was causing a price and inflation in the housing market that they just did not control and they didn't foresee, because they kept Mr. Bernanke at the time, another one of the Fed chairmen, he kept saying that there was no bubble in the housing market. So that's what happened, is that inflation just kept getting out of hand in the housing market.
And they couldn't slow it down. So they were raising interest rates. And the Fed rate at that time was around 5%. And right now we're sitting at, I think, a target of 1.5 to 2. So, but they weren't slowing it down fast enough. And they were lent too much money out, too fast of appreciation. And then things come crashing down. So that's how those interest rates work and what, I mean, basic how they work and what what it means when you hear the Fed is raising interest rate 0.25%. It's not raising all interest rates across, where if you get a mortgage yesterday at 4.5% and they say they raise it 0.25% today, it doesn't immediately mean your mortgage rate today is 5.25. That's not like that, because I mean, if you look at it, the Fed raised interest rates in June this year to that 1.5 to 2% target rate, and mortgage rates have actually been falling since May. So even though the Fed rate went up, mortgage rates have fallen, because it still works off a bit of supply and demand. Banks can control that still. So it depends on the end consumer and how and when they pass those rates on to me and you getting our mortgage loans.
Right. So, I mean, looking at it, oversimplifying it, of course, lower interest rates encourages spending, which is what they've been trying to do ever since the economy crashed. They want people shopping, they want people spending, getting credits, doing all these things. The problem has been is that what it took so long for this rise, where people say that we've been in a 10-year bull market and all of that is that while we have been in a 10-year bull market, it has been a very slow bull market up until very recently that we've been going up even higher because people weren't spending that much at first because they took such a massive hit in 2008 that they didn't rebound and they were still pretty shaken up after that crash. So even though things were getting cheaper, not everybody was spending, which is why interest rates pretty much went down to zero. They were just get out there and spend and don't worry about it. That's why it was the best time to pretty much pick up mortgages because you were getting 30-year fixed loans at very, very low interest rates. But they did smarten up where they just weren't lending out to anybody. You know, qualifications got a little stiffer, got a little harder to get into the housing market at that point.
Dodd-Frank, you had to start actually proving you had income, proving you had assets, not the shadow loans where back in the day it said you could fog a mirror, you could get a loan, like stated income. You could just walk into a subprime mortgage lender and say, hey, I make $60,000 a year and I want you to lend $100,000 on this $100,000 house. And they would do it because they would package that mortgage up and sell the paper to somebody else. Or nowadays it becomes much more difficult to buy a house where they have a lot more qualifications based on income, W-2s. They started putting in debt to income requirements. So they changed a lot of regulations.
Yeah, and I mean, right now, what's causing the Fed to start raising interest rates and everything is that they're getting a national report of housing market appreciating month over month drastically and a very low inventory. So this increase in demand and low inventory is causing them to raise interest rates to kind of level out the field a little bit because demand is going up, prices are going up, but wages aren't. So they're not rising as fast as all the prices of the houses are. So this causes an issue when it comes to affordability. So by raising interest rates, they're hoping to kind of keep a control on affordability as much as possible, which, I mean, you got to try it, of course, but you always overcorrect. So I think they're going to raise interest rates. And again, this is why we say it's an opinion. You know, this is my personal opinion on this, where I think they're going to try to raise interest rates and they're going to overshoot into what is somewhat of a strong economy. And I think it's going to affect us, you know, later on in a very bad way. But I mean, we'll cover that some later date. But right now, to kind of just break it down, interest rates, how they affect the real estate market. So John did some math calculations over here. And you want to go over what you kind of found out with raising interest rates. What does it actually mean on your mortgage?
Yeah, okay. So I'll try to slow it down. There's going to be a lot of numbers, and it's kind of hard to visualize just listening to this. But I'm going to base this all on what would happen if the mortgage rates went up 0.25% at a time, and how that affects that person's ability to buy that house. What does it do to the payment? And what does that person now have to make money to afford with the current regulations? And I'll give you an example back from October of 1979 when inflation was like rampant, interest rates were 15-18% when they raised the interest rate 4% in 1 month, and how that would now affect the prices to show like how hard they can slam on the brakes to slow the economy, slow that car back down to where they need it to be. And so before we do that though, you need to understand for those of you who don't know how a mortgage is really work. Now, I'm not a mortgage lender. This is just based on my experience of having my license and knowing real estate. When you go to qualify for a mortgage, they will allow you to, you can't have over 45% of debt payment to your income. So basically that means if you make $10,000, you cannot pay more than $4,500 towards any form of debt. Now that's all debt. That is student loans, credit cards, car payments, mortgage. So if your mortgage that you're trying to buy for this house puts you over 45%, they won't let you qualify for the house. So that's how you go and get into your certain price ranges. So now you have this a little bit of a problem now where pricing and housing is getting very high and demand is still staying very low and is pricing a lot of people out because they physically can't afford mortgages because wages aren't rising. So they're trying to slow things down a little bit. So that is how they one of the basics they do for qualification. So now for my little example here, we're going to assume that this person has no other debt. The only debt they're going to have is the mortgage and their house payment. So no credit cards, no car payments, no student loans, nothing. So this person is trying to buy a $200,000 house, putting 5% down. There's $5,000 in taxes and $1,000 in insurance. And now a new thing with the new regulations is they roll that tax and insurance payment into your actual payment. So that's part of your considered debt, is collecting that money and paying for your insurance and your taxes on your houses. So $200,000, 5% down, $5,000 in taxes, $1,000 insurance. Now this person qualifies, goes to buy that house, and interest rates are currently 5%. So that means that current, that mortgage payment on that $200,000 house, 5% down, is going to be $1,520 a month, roughly. So now that equates to get to that maxing out to 45%, that person will need to make $40,533 a year. That, now that's gross, that doesn't take out taxes or anything like that, which is why they keep it at 45%. They need to make $40,533 a year gross income to afford that $1,520 payment for that $200,000 house. So hope you follow what I'm going with there.
Well, what we're gonna do is all this math that John is talking about in this example itself, I'm gonna put it on the show notes below so you can actually follow along in the show notes as John breaks down this example.
Okay. So now let's say that all of a sudden that same buyer, no debt, goes to buy that $200,000 house later on, and now interest rates are 5.25, 25 or 0.25%, 0.25% higher than was in that first example. That new payment for that same exact house is going to be $1,550, $30 higher than what it would have been at 5%. So now that person, instead of just making that $40,533, now needs to make $41,333, $800 more a year to qualify for that same exact house. So that's a 2% rise in somebody's income to offset that 0.25% increase in interest rate for reflecting the payment. So now essentially every time they raise a quarter point on that analogy that I was talking about for that same house, you're gonna need to make 2% more a year. So now if you follow what they're talking about in wages not rising, they're not rising at a significant rate. So when they go rising interest rates, that means that those same people, and since they're not raising 2% every single year, and if they raise 1% throughout the entire year, that means that's 8% that somebody's income would need to rise to afford that same exact house. So when they go rising interest rates, that's slowing down the appreciation because less and less people are going to be able to buy those homes. Now let's take this back to that's why a slow, gradual rate increase is nothing I'm too concerned about, because they're just trying to normalize them, get them back to where they need to be, and keep the economy growing at a steady pace and not overheating but not cooling off too much.
But also, I mean, you're not saying that just because the Fed raised it a quarter point means that your mortgage interest rate is being raised a quarter point, right?
Correct. So, I mean, now that just means the banks are going to have to do things. So eventually, as they do start raising rates, that means it's becoming more expensive for banks to lend to each other. And eventually, to get their bottom line, their profitability, it's going to be passed on to the consumer via their loans. That's what banks' jobs are for, is to make money for the bank, controlling interest rates and lending money. So that is what that means. So it's not going to be interest rates on mortgages immediately rise, but that means lending is getting more expensive. So if they stop lending to businesses, they quit borrowing as much, that means they're not expanding, they're not hiring new people. That means people might not, unemployment might rise a little bit, and then it starts trickle over into real estate, because real estate prices is not a cause, it's an effect. It just follows what the market's doing, what they're buying, what people, and the confidence of people wanting to buy or sell.
So, I mean, one thing that I think it's very important to keep in mind is when they talk about raising interest rates, that's a macro look at the economy. right? That's not a micro effect on real estate. So what we're looking at right now, rising interest rates and stuff like that, it's a macro on the economy. And for that to trickle down, like John is saying, it's a micro on the real estate side, which banks are the ones that are lending money. So if interest rates are rising, banks are not going to rush to raise their interest on properties because then they're going to be lending out, doing less loans. So they also got to control, you know, their own interest rates. So they're going to determine what's more affordable to them and how much they can raise interest rates, right?
Correct. So now let's take that back to the late 1970s, early 80s, when inflation was just running away from everything. The economy was moving too quick. Not, the economy wasn't growing too quick. Inflation was going too fast, and it makes it harder to control. So what they wanted to do was slow it down. So then in Paul Volcker, who was the Fed chairman at the time, in October of 1979, raised interest rates 4% in a single month, or we're raising them at a 0.25% every, or not every month, but he, we're raising at a 0.25% every couple months. He raised it 4% in one shot. So he slammed on the brakes. So now let's run that back into that same analogy of that person trying to buy that $200,000 house. That person, if they raise 4% interest rates rose to 4% in one shot, and say it rose from 5% to 9%. So just as a refresher, somebody that's trying to buy a $200,000 house needs to make $40,533 when the interest rates are 5%. Now, if all of a sudden those interest rates rise to 9%, that same person needs to be making $54,080. So it's a 33% rise in income in one shot.
That's doable.
Yeah, I was like, I've gotten a big 33% raise all of a sudden one time. I mean, why not?
In one month. Yeah.
So he slammed on the brakes. So just overnight, and now remember, it's not mortgage rates rose 9%, but banks would drastically raise. You would see a huge increase at that time. It's not 4%, but it would be a huge increase to where those, under the current regulations of how they lend today, that would drastically price a lot of people up very quickly, because incomes would need to rise 33% at the same time to offset that difference, so the same amount of buyers could afford the same amount of houses. So now all of a sudden it just priced a lot of people out of buying those houses, and that's going to increase inventory, that's going to increase potentially unemployment, and less people are going to afford houses. And since it's the supply and demand on houses, inventory would go up, days on market would go up, less people could afford to buy houses, and asset prices would stable off, potentially fall a little bit. So that is something to kind of keep in mind on how those can really affect real estate prices.
Right. And now I know we didn't talk about this before, but that happening, supply happening and them raising interest rates, what does that do to the dollar? I mean, as the interest rates rise and it causes inflation, right? No, the opposite. As interest rates rise, it's to slow down the economy. It makes the dollar stronger, which is what's happening right now in the economy. The dollar's becoming a lot stronger compared to other currencies. So, I mean, it's making investments in the United States a little more difficult than using cheap dollars to buy investments here. So the stock market and all those things are going to slowly get affected if the dollar gets too strong. I mean, are you seeing anything like that as we're looking at this?
Yeah, and that's what I said. Like, I read something the other day, or heard it on a podcast, I can't remember what it was, that the rest of the world seems to be like 2 years behind where the U.S. currently is. Because they're just finishing up doing QE and trying to start raising interest rates, or backing off buying their treasury bond or the bills and stuff like that to stimulate the economy around the world. So that's why America can't just shoot up and the dollar get too strong and raise interest rates, because the rest of the world is still trying to catch back up and recover from the last great recession.
What are you talking about, QE? Explain that.
It's called quantitative easing. It was the plan that the government put in place to stimulate the economy as a new kind of experimental thing of what it was. And essentially the Fed started buying treasury notes, bills, bonds from the Treasury Department in buying and investing in America, which basically put more money into the government's pocket, where the government passed on to via stimulus programs to try to get the economy moving again that allowed more money to kind of flow. They did kind of an asset swap. So then the government, that's why our debt has skyrocketed so much in the last 10 years, is because the Fed was buying all those treasury bills. It was one reason. And now we have to pay back those treasury bills to what the Fed is now holding. So that's kind of what QE is. It's the way for the central banks to try to stimulate the economy, inject more cash, and get more people lending, borrowing, and spending, or and ultimately spending for the end consumer to stimulate growth and consumption.
So the reason I ask that is because once you start studying the macro, you can go down a rabbit hole very easily into all these cause and effects. Because
it's a bottomless pit. You'll drive yourself nuts. John, the reason we say it, because John and I have both been down that road, and you try to figure it out to time it and plan it, and there's trillions of dollars in hedge funds and mutual funds and people trying to control it, and nobody, there's a few angels out there that, unicorns, that have kind of guessed it right, but you have to be very, very smart, and there's just so many things that play into interest rates and money moving around the world on a macro level when you talk about something as the overall world economy.
So, yeah, and I mean, it's like I said, it's a rabbit hole. Once you get into it, at least for us, I got hooked on it a while ago, and then I stopped because I needed therapy afterwards. I was like, holy shit, what the hell are these guys doing? So I kind of pulled away from it, and now John got into it, and he got me into it again, and now I'm going back into the damn rabbit hole. But it's just, you need to understand the macro, because then that is going to affect, it's going to at least help you understand local. So going into local, like going back to the question that we had, how is raising interest rates going to affect the local market is affordability, right? So as mortgage rates go up, it's going to affect affordability of houses. So you look at that same person that was making $40,000, interest rates keep going up, they need to either make a lot more money or buy a cheaper house. Right, so affordability becomes a big issue. So if you're living in an area that already is not affordable, raising interest rates is gonna perhaps affect you the most. Now, one of the benefits that we have, at least in our opinion, of being in San Antonio, is San Antonio is a very affordable city. It's known for being an affordable city. So even if interest rates rise and affordability becomes an issue nationwide, San Antonio is going to be one of those markets that's still going to be affordable to buy houses in, because San Antonio is still growing. We have areas developing. I mean, there's so much more infrastructure growth potential for San Antonio than any other major city, let's say here in Texas. So keeping that in mind, if you are an investor in San Antonio, raising interest rates, you look at it that way, is affordability. Where are people going to go? Because this doesn't stop people from needing a house. You know, they still need a roof over their head. So are rents going to go up? You know, are people going to go back to renting? Do they go back into more affordable housing? So right now, like, not many houses are being built under $200,000 because cost of building is just not feasible for houses under that price. So, you know, this causes that affordability issue that you want to keep an eye on. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I really don't have any thoughts on that. I mean, I just agree. It's just like interest rates are rising. They've been so low for so long that they need to raise a little bit, because if another recession happens when rates are already near zero, they can't drop them any further below zero, and if they go negative, nobody really knows what happens there. So as rates go rising, it's a sign of a healthy economy. Because I remember when they raised it from 0% to 0.25%, the stock market took off because they thought everything was starting to look good and rosy. But now they raise it from 1.25% to 1.5% and it falls.
Right.
So it's kind of an overall like gauge on the health of an economy and how things are moving.
Yeah, because since May until now, mortgage interest rates have fallen a little bit.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. They can't raise them too far, too fast, because those are just bank interest rates. So now you're in consumer rate that's still based on kind of a supply and demand thing. So you kind of got to see and wait. How you can't raise them too fast, otherwise banks need to raise them and you'll throw the economy right back in a new recession. So they kind of have to slowly rise them to let the economy absorb that shock of those rising interest rates and that borrowing. So
I mean, what I see is that if they raise them too quick and they cause an issue like they did before, they're going to do what they did before in 2004, 5, 6, where they're going to need people to buy houses. So right now, they're still pretty relatively strict on the loans that they're giving out. I mean, it's not like it was before that anybody that can fog up a mirror could get a loan. So they are being picky right now. They want to make sure that you can actually afford a house. I mean, it's a new astonishing, you know, revelation that they had. They're like, well, let's make sure that you can afford it.
This house before I just lend you a bunch of money. But it didn't matter back then because they were packaging up those mortgages because, like, I mean, this might be getting a little advanced, but when you get a mortgage through somebody and you go through a mortgage broker, they don't hold that mortgage. All they do is originate the mortgage, get it going, and they sell your paper that you for that loan to somebody else. Usually, and it goes to a big investment group, and then it's serviced by Wells Fargo or whoever it may be. But that's usually not who originates it. Probably isn't who's end up going to end up holding it. If you're listening and you've had all of a sudden they say, hey, Wells Fargo sold your note to Chase and now you need to start paying Chase. That's what happens. Like somebody just bought your future payments on that investment. So back then, they didn't care. They would originate anything because they were just going after commissions. And they originate it and immediately sell it to somebody else because up until that point, real estate never went down. Then it did.
Right.
But they didn't care because they thought, just like, oh, prices just never fall.
So, I mean, for research purposes, if you're in real estate and if you're listening to this, you probably are in real estate. Watch the movie The Big Short. I read that book when it first came out back in 2010, I believe it was. And then they came out with a movie recently. It's if you're not a person that likes the economy and shit like that, it might be a boring movie. To me, it was an action. It was an action-packed thriller. You know, because they kind of break down what happened with mortgage-backed securities, with lending on all these properties, and then what happened
it
when
really
the crash
just breaks
actually
down
happened.
How it happened, what started it, and where it went from there, and what all went on. And another one, if you're wanting to understand like basic economy when it comes to the interest rates, inflation, and deflation, there's a fantastic YouTube video called How the Economic Machine Works. It was recorded by a man by the name of Ray Dalio. And Ray Dalio is one of those unicorns I was telling you about earlier, seems to predict it constantly right. He runs the world's largest hedge fund with, billions of dollars that they have under management, institutional funds. When he was taking on funds, he had at least $100 million to invest with him. So, I mean, guy knows his stuff. And he created a video that goes through how the basic economic machine works between buying, selling, consumption, inflation, deflation, and the levers that the government can use to try to control economic growth and overall stability of the economy. So I highly encourage you to check out those two resources. 30 minutes, it's got a nice little video of walkthrough stick figures and stuff. I mean, it's very basic, high-level understanding, not high-level, but just a very easy level to understand how it all works and what it all means.
Or another easy route for you is just keep checking in with us.
There you go. Do that.
we look at this thing on a very analytical level, very detail-oriented. I mean, we analyze the charts. We look at what they look at, and then we interpret it ourselves. So we are not just watching CNBC and listening to Bubble Vision and whatever regurgitate whatever they say. We actually try to find the data ourselves, look at their Fed charts, look at all the charts ourselves, and analyze it because it does affect our business. You know, when we start seeing these things happening, we can start anticipating what are going to be the trends that are going to happen to us. So kind of going back to affordability, if interest rates keep rising, affordability becomes an issue when it comes down to mortgages. So if affordability becomes an issue, where are people going to go? Where is it going to be affordable? So looking at Texas, San Antonio is a very affordable market to live in. So we are not too worried about raising interest rates. We feel that in San Antonio, we still have a lot of room to grow. We have a lot of houses right now still selling well under 100 grand. You know, so it creates affordability. Those houses, of course, they're going to keep going up as they have been. And San Antonio has a lot, again, I mean, it's kind of, you know, redundant at this point, but it has a lot of room to grow.
Yeah, it does.
So, I mean, that's how we look at it. When we start seeing all these things, we don't really worry about it all that much, at least not right now. You know, right now, like John said, real estate is not a cause. It's an effect of what happens in the market, in the macro economy.
Because, I mean, people get this wrong all the time, and it's a kind of an irk with that. Somebody's not in the industry, and they're scared of real estate, and they say real estate caused the last recession, like it dropped. Like, no, real estate did not cause that. What caused it was the lending on real estate. In the regulations at the time is making bad loans based on real estate, and the way the regulations allowed that money to flow into real estate was terrible. Like no regulations, no money, no assets. They just gave money to anybody. So that is what caused the last recession, was the lending on real estate caused everything to fall, not real estate itself. Real estate treated correctly by itself based on fundamentals and understanding, listen to our podcast, we'll kind of explain those things. But it's a very safe, secure asset when treated and purchased and managed correctly. But that was a problem. The one piece of it, the lending, a very big piece of it, lending, got out of hand, and too many people got too much money and they started buying based on appreciation and appreciation alone. Appreciation is nice. It's awesome. That's icing on the cake. That's not the cake itself. And when that all of a sudden turned backwards and appreciation didn't happen, a lot of loans started defaulting. So.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes back to personal financing at that point. I mean, back in 2007, when all this shit happened, there were a lot of investors that didn't get affected by the market crash and stuff like that because they were smart. The way they picked up their houses, the way they held them, they weren't over-leveraged. They were smart investors. So there's a way for you to purchase properties and for you to get into a real estate where it's not speculative and it's not high risk. So for a little more detail on the financial side, you can listen back to our podcast that we did before this one, or a couple before this one. I don't know when this one's going to air. But it's with Andrew Mittelstadt. So we went over personal finances and stuff like that, and we're going to eventually do a very in-depth one because personal finances is a very, very big deal when it comes time to investing in real estate. Whether you're running a business, you're doing this part-time, however you're doing this, understanding and managing your personal finances is how you're going to prevent any type of crisis from happening to you, right? So there could be a national crisis, but it doesn't mean that you personally have to go through that crisis. So eventually we'll put one together once we figure out what that looks like in a structured format. But we'll put one together to kind of, you know, share with you how it is that we do our personal finances to make sure that even if shit goes to hell, you are still sitting good. You know, you're not being affected like everybody else is. So anything else that you're thinking, John?
No, I mean, that's really kind of it. I mean, I don't want to go too far into and make it all consumable in one episode based on just the interest rates. So, yep. Two resources, The Big Short, movie, book, it's great. Then the How the Economic Machine Works. And it's like, I encourage you to go and listen to our podcast, but go watch both of those, read both of those, understand them, and then ask us questions of what you don't understand, and we'll do more podcasts and answer more questions.
Yeah, I mean, we do this every day. Right now, we're all reading a book. And this book is like, 700 pages, all about money, all about how the money works, how insurances. I mean, you got to educate yourself, right? So if you're not going to because you don't have the time, or maybe you just don't like it. I mean, there's a ton of people that just don't like educating on this kind of stuff. It's very boring. for us it's exciting. So if that's the case, just keep listening to the podcast and we'll keep sharing. Just like the title says, it's an investor's journey, right? So it's our journey through this investment world, how we invest, how we analyze, how we go through the ups and downs, how we plan. And eventually when we fuck shit up, we're going to share with you why it happened and how we got out of it, right? Because, I mean, things are going to go bad. Hopefully not too bad, but, you know, things happen. So we're going to share the good, the bad, the ugly, the pretty, the everything with you guys. So any questions, any more stuff that you guys want to hear, or even on this subject, if you want anything that you want us to expand on, feel free to reach out to us. We're very accessible, social media, emails, wherever you want, we're everywhere. Just send us your questions. And hope you guys keep enjoying the podcast. And again, any questions, anything, just reach out to us and catch you on the next one.